Funding for Think comes from SMU's continuing and professional education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. How has the digital age changed power in the 21st century, and what will the United States need to do to exercise it wisely? While military might and economic strength remain critical to overall power in the modern world, international relations scholar Joseph S. Nye Jr. reminds us that non-state actors now wield tremendous influence in the world, both within and across national borders. And he argues this new reality means the United States needs to think not only about exercising power over others, but also about using it to achieve national and global objectives, including solving the problems of climate change, terrorism, poverty, and disease. Joseph Nye is University Distinguished Professor and former Dean of the Kennedy School of Government at Harvard University. His new book is called The Future of Power. Joe, welcome to Think.
Nice to be with you, Chris.
We should start by talking about something you've written about extensively in the past and also runs through this book, Smart Power. What is smart power?
Well, smart power is the ability to combine hard and soft power. And power is simply the ability to get others to do what you want. And you can do it three ways. You can threaten people with coercion, that's sticks. You can pay people, that's carrots. Or you can attract people and persuade them to get them to want what you want. And that's soft power. And combining hard power, payment or sticks, with attraction and persuasion in the right proportions is smart power.
Are smaller states better at utilizing smart power because they haven't had as many sticks and carrots as we've had in the past?
Well, sometimes you can have a small state like Norway, which gives a lot of overseas development assistance, or which makes an effort to promote peacekeeping operations and so forth. And because they don't have a lot of hard power, they tend to rest more on their soft power. But large countries like the United States actually use soft power and use it effectively. For example, if you think about the Cold War and how the Cold War ended, the Berlin Wall didn't come down just under a barrage of artillery. It came down under hammers and bulldozers, which were wielded by people whose ideas had changed. And those ideas had gotten through the Iron Curtain and changed people's mind, attracted them to the values of the West. So you could argue that what brought down the Berlin Wall was actually American soft power, not its hard power.
So a lot of people these days worry that the rise of China, which you characterize more as the return of China, is going to mean that the United States is somehow weaker as we move forward. Can you talk about that perception and how you view it?
Well, right now the United States, American people, are going through a period of belief in decline. But this isn't the first time. We thought the Russians were 10 feet tall after Sputnik in the 50s. We thought the Japanese were going to eat our lunch and we're 10 feet tall in the 80s when we had the budget deficits under Ronald Reagan. And now after this new recession, recent recession, we're again thinking that the Chinese are 10 feet tall, but they're not. I mean, the public opinion polls show that a lot of Americans think China is bigger than the U.S. That's simply not the facts. Our economy is three times the size of China. And in terms of wealth per person, 10 times larger. So there's a great exaggeration of China right now, which I think is not very healthy because it makes us overreact out of fear, and it makes the Chinese think that they can push further than they ought to push. So it's getting the right idea about what power relations are is important for having sensible policies.
Joe, what accounts for this? Maybe it's a uniquely American combination of hubris on the one hand and thinking that we can do what we want to do because we're America. At the same time, combined with this sense that there's always a gigantic threat out there that we need to be concerned about.
Well, it's not new in American culture. We have a tradition of worrying about our position in the world at the same time of thinking that we can do a lot. I think the key for Americans to use our power effectively is to realize that the world's becoming a much more complicated place. There's not only the rise of the rest, it's not just China, it's Brazil, Indonesia, India, and so forth. So there are more states that are becoming important. But it's also the shift of power, what I call the diffusion of power, away from all governments, East or West, to non-governmental or non-state actors, which we see in everything from WikiLeaks to the use of Twitter and by demonstrators in Egypt today. That means that while we're still the biggest actor on the stage, states get a lot more crowded, and we're going to have to use a smart power strategy with both hard and soft power to be able to lead others in that kind of a situation.
The situation in Egypt and Iran before that is really interesting because it's a reminder that this technological power, this diffusion of power that now belongs to non-state actors, is very difficult for governments to control. And in fact, when they try, it often seems to backfire on them.
That's exactly right. And that's why, essentially, coercion is often ineffective in these situations, but attraction can still work. Now, it doesn't mean that military force isn't important. You still need an effective military, but it also means that you can't always get what you want from the military alone. You know, a century ago or much of the 20th century, the belief was that the country of the greatest power was the biggest army, and the answer to struggles was whose army wins. In an information age, armies still matter, but there's another dimension, which is whose story wins. What's the narrative by which we're reaching these people who are now empowered with more information? So we have to pay attention to both those things at the same time.
In order to write our story effectively for the rest of the world, we have to understand how they view us in the first place and how they view themselves.
Well, we obviously do polls and things like that. We have reports from embassies and diplomacy. What you find is that the Americans actually have more soft power than most countries. China has been trying to increase its soft power. Hu Jintao told the 17th Party Congress of the Communist Party that China needed to increase its soft power. But a recent poll by the Chicago Council on Global Affairs showed that the United States actually was well ahead in soft power. So there are ways in which you can find out how others view you. And, you know, I think in that sense, one has to be realistic. There are other places besides Asia where that poll I just mentioned was taken, large parts of the Muslim world, where we're not so popular. For example, Pakistan and the Palestinian territories were not as popular.
One of the things, one of the ways that you describe this balance between military force and economic power and non-state or transnational influence is as a 3D chess game. Can you talk a little bit about that metaphor?
Yeah, sometimes people try to reduce everything to one level. They'll say that, you know, the country with the biggest army wins. In fact, what we find is that power is distributed differently in different areas. So if you imagine a three-dimensional chess game in which you play on three boards at once, the top board of military power, the United States is the only power or the only country with global power projection capabilities. It's likely to stay that way for, I think, a couple of decades. Sometimes people call that a unipolar world, that there's one center. But if you go to the next board down, the Board of Economic Relations among countries, there you find that there are balancers to American power. Europe, when it acts as one entity, which it does in economics, actually has an economy larger than the United States. And China is obviously up and coming, and Japan is a very powerful economy. There, people call this multipolar. There are other countries that can balance us. And when you go to the bottom board of this three-dimensional chess game, the board of transnational relations, things across borders outside the control of governments, whether it be terrorists or international criminals or impersonal things like global climate change or pandemics, then it makes no sense to talk about unipolar or multipolar. This bottom board is chaotically organized. The only way you can solve these kinds of challenges that come from this bottom board is by cooperation with others. You can't do it alone.
How effective is the United States at getting other states to cooperate with us for shared interests?
Well, actually, we always focus on the things that we don't get, but we actually are pretty good at getting more than most people or most countries. the Americans have more alliances and better alliances than any other country. We also have a large number of informal networks, things that grow out of, for example, the fact that 700,000 foreign students come to the United States every year, and many of them go back and keep their ties. The fact that many Americans have families overseas because they are immigrants. So in terms of informal social networks as well as formal government alliances, the United States is probably better placed than any other country.
Joseph S. Nye, Jr. is University Distinguished Service Professor and former Dean of the Kennedy School of Government at Harvard. His new book is called The Future of Power. We'll resume our discussion with Joe in just a couple of minutes. You can join us by sending email to think@kera.org or by asking a question on the phone at 1-800-933-5372. We also would like for you to call our other phone number. This is the membership line, and that's where you make a contribution of financial support to keep this show strong, to keep the entire station strong, to keep public radio going in this community and elsewhere. 1-888-694-6931 is that number. You can also make a contribution online at kera.org. Jeff Whittington is back now. Hi, Jeff.
Hey, Chris, and what a great conversation with Joseph Nye. If you're enjoying this conversation, support it by contributing at kera.org. Or by calling 888-694-6931. We do have your very own copy of The Future of Power by Joseph S. Nye, Jr. available today as a thank you gift when you join the station at the $120 membership level or above. Of course, the book is out. There's quite a bit of buzz about the book out there in international affairs circles as well as public radio circles, and we're thrilled to have him as our guest today. We know that these kinds of topics are important to you, and that's why we carry these kinds of conversations on the show. That's why, the position of the United States, how we relate to other countries around the world, what our interactions are, those are top of the list issues, even for us right here in North Texas, here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area and the surrounding metro area, because we play an important role here in how the United States is perceived abroad. Well, those are the conversations we bring to you because we know they're important to you, but there's a cost associated with producing this kind of content.
The cost is, things as simple as turning on the lights and running the broadcast hours to obtaining the program to the cost that it gets that it takes to research the topics that we bring to you. Of course, we have a full staff of award-winning journalists in our news department. All of that comes with a cost. We think that it comes with a great benefit to you as a listener, but we would ask that you chip in a few dollars to defray the cost of the programming and recognize the reality that we don't earn money through advertising here. Most of the time when we're not fundraising, you don't hear commercials. You never hear commercials. You occasionally hear underwriting spots. We're able to do it that way because it's how public radio is set up. We would love to hear from you with a contribution at 1-888-694-6931 or online at kera.org. We have $134,025 left to raise from an overall goal of $700,000.
And we've chipped away at that this hour thanks to Paul Maynard in Dallas, Debbie Farr in Oak Point, Christopher Story and Alexis Vega in Dallas. Also thanks to Mr. and Mrs. Steve Taylor in Fort Worth, Ellen Barnes Piffner in Dallas, Sherrod Elway in Plano. I think I pronounced your last name right, Sherrod. I hope I did. And Emma Shaw in Dallas. Thanks to each of you for doing your part. You can join these great folks who are making public radio a reality here in North Texas by contributing at kera.org or on the phone 1-888-694-6931.
Be the next supporter with a new gift, an additional gift, a renewing gift, however you want to do it, and at whatever level. We appreciate your participation at kera.org or 1-888-694-6931. This hour's guest is Joseph S. Nye, Jr. We have copies of his book, The Future of Power, available this afternoon as a thank you gift when you make a contribution at or above the $120 level. Thanks so much.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's informal courses for adults, dedicated to enriching lives for 55 years. How about enriching yours? You can learn more at smu.edu/CFP.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is Joseph S. Nye, Jr., University Distinguished Service Professor and former Dean of the Kennedy School of Government at Harvard. His new book is called The Future of Power. We welcome you to join this conversation by calling us now at 1-800-933-5372 or by sending email to think@kera.org. I want to go back to this issue of the economies in places like China and India and Indonesia growing, but the relative wealth per capita is not growing at the same rate. Why is it so important to look at how much money individuals have as opposed to looking at the overall balance of the economy?
Well, let's take China as an example. Goldman Sachs has predicted that Chinese economy will be equal to the size of the American economy sometime in the 2020s. That's plausible because with 1.3 billion people and growth at 10% a year, that's bound to happen if the growth rate continues. But when China equals the American economy in size, it won't equal the American economy in composition because there'll be hundreds of millions of poor people in impoverished regions at the same time. So the American economy is a much more sophisticated economy than the Chinese economy, and per capita income, how rich people are individually, the United States is 10 times richer than China today. So it's a mistake just to look at the lump size of an economy, so to speak. You have to look at the quality of what it does and what it produces. And per capita income is a first cut at how you can judge that.
And then we've also seen China take some sort of one step up and two steps back when it comes to things like the exercise of soft power. The Beijing Olympics, by most accounts, were pretty successful in presenting China as this successful modern state. And then you have a Nobel Prize winner who is still imprisoned for being a dissident.
Yeah, this is a real problem for China. China knows that as it gets stronger with its hard power, military and economic power, it's likely to frighten its neighbors. If it can increase its soft power attractiveness at the same time, then those neighbors are less likely to ally against China. And so China is trying to increase its soft power. Hu Jintao, the president of China, has called for that. And they've spent billions of dollars on setting up Confucius Institutes, having the Shanghai Expo this year, so forth. But then they go and lock up Liu Xiaobo and prevent him going to the Nobel ceremony, and they shoot themselves in the foot. They basically undercut all the investment. I was giving a lecture at Beijing University a couple of years ago, and one of the students asked me, how can China increase its soft power? And my answer was, lighten up. If you'd let your civil society have more freedom, you might have more effectiveness in soft power. But, of course, that goes against the grain of how they run China, which is an authoritarian system.
Let's talk about freedom in a place like Egypt. What is the economic cost to trying to shut off the Internet in order to quell this revolution?
Oh, closing the Internet is a very expensive step. After all, banking, travel, trade transactions, among others, all depend upon quick and easy access to international as well as domestic communications. So when they shut off the Internet, they were taking a rather drastic step. And what's more, it wasn't all that effective. People could work around it. You could use text messaging on regular landlines. In fact, there's a new device where you can actually call a number and be able to get to Twitter outside the country. So it didn't really close off all communications, but it certainly hurt the Egyptian economy.
It's remarkable how fast that happens now as well. Things travel so quickly that it really doesn't give governments much time to respond before people are working around what that response is.
Well, that's it. I think the idea that you can suddenly cut your population off is very difficult. I mean, again, take China, where they have what's called the Great Firewall of China. In other words, the Chinese censor various internet service providers in China, and they have machines that test for certain code words, for example, the words Falun Gong or Dalai Lama and so forth will be prohibited. You can't get the message through on the net if it has such words in it. But nonetheless, sophisticated young Chinese students quickly learn how to get around that by directly connecting to servers overseas or using what's called proxy servers. So it may cut off a lot of people's information, but it doesn't prevent all information from flowing.
Are you surprised that we haven't seen more prominent cyber terrorism yet?
Well, terrorists use the internet for recruitment and coordination. And in that sense, there is a use of the internet by terrorists, and it has helped them instead of having to cross a border. If you can send electrons across the border to recruit people, then there's less chance of being caught by the police and so forth.
Yeah.
But what we haven't seen, and I have a chapter in the book on cyber power, which is the use of the internet to destroy things. For example, you can essentially send electrons across a border and get a machine to vibrate too fast and destroy itself. This is an example. This is the so-called Stuxnet worm, which basically has caused uranium enrichment centrifuges in Iran to spin too fast and thereby collapse or break apart. Now, in principle, a terrorist could find ways to get into American electrical systems and to basically shut those systems down or let them collapse. And imagine that it's February and you're in Chicago, or I guess this February even in Dallas.
Certainly.
And all the electricity stops and the pipes freeze and a lot more terrible things happen. Well, that can have the same effect as a bomb. So far, terrorists haven't done that. But there's no reason to believe that they couldn't do that in the future.
What's really disturbing and remarkable about this is that the number of people it would take to launch these attacks is getting smaller and smaller and smaller based on the technology.
Well, that's the impact of information on what I call the diffusion of power. You get super empowered individuals or small groups who suddenly have capacities that previously were restricted only to governments or companies with large budgets. You know, in terms of communicating around the world, you can do this. You could have done it 30 years ago, but you had to be pretty rich to do it because it was very expensive. Today, anybody can do it if they have the price of entry into an internet cafe. Hmm. And if you're using Skype, it's free.
On the other hand, that same diffusion of power can be exercised for really positive things.
Well, that's right. And that's why we need to stand for internet freedom and the free flow of ideas. That's where our strength is. Our values and our soft power come from that. And so in that sense, there's good news and bad news about the diffusion of power. It means that more people have access to more information and the power that comes with information than any time in human history. And the question is whether that's used for good or for ill.
What about these non-state actors, NGOs and organizations and people like George Soros and Bill Gates and their agendas, which don't necessarily originate based on the intentions of the countries where they're based? What ability do governments have or do they need to exercise in how these organizations are working?
Well, if you look at, take the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, which is trying to eradicate diseases in Africa and elsewhere, many governments will welcome that. If you take George Soros's Open Society Institute, which is trying to develop institutions for freedom of speech, some governments don't welcome that. And so they will harass and tax and arrest and close down. So governments still have power, and we shouldn't neglect that. Then these super empowered individuals like Gates or Soros can do things that they maybe couldn't have done 30, 40 years ago, but governments still have the capacity to fight back. And that cat and mouse game, that struggle back and forth, goes on now and is likely to continue.
What's the strategy by governments, which in the past have provided sort of the sole source of official information through a state-run news agency, now that regular people are communicating about things that are happening, just specifically within their borders?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, if think about the Gulf War in 1991, most of the framing of what was happening there was done by CNN and by the BBC.
Mm-hmm.
And so it took on a sort of a Western or American perspective. By the time of the Iraq War in 2003, you'd had the rise of Al Jazeera, which is a new cable video TV from Doha and Qatar, which had a very different perspective. And that led to a different way of approaching it. So there was a huge change just a decade there. And then when you think of the ability to use the Internet to get information which isn't on TV at all, which is what we saw in Tunisia, then you have an even further diffusion of power. So the access of it, it's very hard for governments to completely control access to information. It doesn't mean that they can't restrict it. I mean, Saudi Arabia is an area in the Persian Gulf, or Syria in the Middle East, which really do restrict information, but it's a leaky system.
Joseph S. Nye, Jr. is University Distinguished Service Professor and former Dean of the Kennedy School of Government at Harvard. His new book is called The Future of Power. We'll resume our conversation with Joe in a couple of minutes. You can get on the line to join us by calling 1-800-933-5372. You can also send email to think@kera.org. In this quick break that we want to take from our conversation with Joe Nye is Jeff Whittington. Now joining me, he is host and host of Anything You Ever Wanted to Know and senior producer of Think. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Chris.
I was about to give you my title, but I want to keep my title.
Well, you know, that's fine. It's up to you. You know, it's up to you. No, it really is up to you, though. You who listens to the station, you who you're continuing to listen during this membership campaign. And, you know, we're so close to wrapping this drive up successfully. It has been a great campaign. Our goal of $700,000 is a large goal, and it's something that we don't take lightly, but you know, that's how things are right now. I mean, we've got to raise a certain amount of money because the other revenue streams may not be delivering as much. And the lion's share of revenue for the station always has come from you, the listeners. And this year it's close to 60%. Because, you know, it's been a tough economy, and even though North Texas hasn't been hit as hard as a lot of areas around the country, the kind of corporate support and foundation support, those kinds of things have started to, you know, it's taken a little longer for those to dry up a little bit. And now we're coming to you and asking you to, you know, as we always have, to do your part to support this public radio station. We only have $134,025 left to raise in the drive, and that is we're within one day territory here. We've made great progress during Think today. I think we raised about $3,000 or $4,000 today during Think. So thanks so much to everyone who's called, but we're still waiting to hear from you online at kera.org or via the web or via the phone rather at 888-694-6931.
You can always get to us if you're listening to the podcast at some other time. So please, we appreciate and encourage your participation whenever you happen to be listening to this show. But if you're listening live right now, the time really is ideal. Perhaps you wanted, we're down to $132,200 left to raise. Thanks so much to Deborah Beeritz in Dallas, Olin Lacey Jr. and Lori McClanahan in Fort Worth. Also, Eldon Vigil in Dallas. Thank you all very much. We can accept your contributions at kera.org. Or on the phone at, thank you, Eldon Vigil in Dallas. 1-888-694-6931 is the telephone number. Sorry, Eldon, whichever of those pronunciations is correct, hopefully. Maybe neither.
Make that one the one that counts.
Right. And ignore the other one and be offended. Sorry.
Just to remind everybody, we read your names typically off of a 7-Eleven black and white closed circuit television
camera.
Security camera monitor. It's an Ikigami monitor. I'm going to look after this break the back of it and get the date that if it still says on the back the date on the plate it was made. It was from like the late 70s. It still works. It's pretty cool looking actually, but sometimes it's kind of hard to read your name or to even figure out how it's pronounced. You know, we do our best with guests, but we can usually ask the guest, how do you pronounce, say your name for us before we go on the air, which is one of our daily checkoff things we do with guests, but it's hard with you. So please, your forgiveness is appreciated. But you know what else is appreciated? Your support at 888-694-6931, your online contributions at kera.org.
Thank you very much, Theodore Soulakis in Plano, Hannah Murdoch in Denton, and Barbara Walters calling from, I would imagine, somewhere in the great North Texas area.
Maybe not. Maybe calling from New York.
Maybe. Barbara Walters. That would be very flattering, wouldn't it?
Wouldn't that be nice?
I don't really do Barbara Walters-style interviews.
It's the Plano Barbara Walters.
All right, the Plano Barbara Walters.
Thank you, though.
It's our favorite Barbara Walters.
That's right.
Thank you, Barbara.
The one who listens to the show. You know, I want to thank Stephen again. Stephen Gore. It says from UT Southwestern Medical Center, and I'm using your name, Stephen, because your whole name, Stephen, because your message is just so great. Stephen says, I wanted to say thanks for such an excellent program. He emailed the show in the first hour today, Chris, and he says, I've called more than a few times to ask a question on the show, and even in the years I was not able to give anything, I could feel secure that I would not be turned away from participating in the programming. He says, this year I was able to contribute and feel like it was as much a thank you to KERA as it was to those people who contributed to the station when I couldn't. And Stephen, that is such a great message because that's what you're doing when you contribute to the station. You're making this radio station possible for everybody. And if you've listened for years or months or for decades perhaps and never contributed, it's because other people have provided the funding that you've been able to listen to the station. So you can thank them and also make this service possible for, you never know who's listening to public radio in North Texas. Perhaps a next very important leader on the national stage could be listening to the station, and your contribution is part of what makes it possible.
Think of your contribution as seed money. Really what you're doing, every time you make a contribution, there's someone else out there who is probably inspired to do the same. Eventually we make our goals and we're able to move back full-time to regular programming. We always appreciate that you take time out of your day, that you pick up the phone, or that you go online to kera.org and make the contribution. We try to make it as quick and easy as possible, and we also offer thank you gifts, which make it a little sweeter. You can receive a copy of The Future of Power by Joseph S. Nye Jr. this hour when you make a contribution at or above the $120 level. The number to call is 1-888-694-6931, or you can go online
at kera.org. It is sort of the original microfinance in reverse program. We're not asking for you to pay, you know, for $1 million budget or multi-million dollar budget. We're asking you to do whatever's right for you, $60, $120, $200, to invest that in the station so that you can continue to reap the news and information and entertainment rewards throughout the year. Call 888-694-6931 or contribute online at kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's informal courses for adults, dedicated to enriching lives for 55 years. How about enriching yours? You can learn more at smu.edu/CFP.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is Joseph S. Nye Jr., University Distinguished Service Professor and former Dean of the Kennedy School of Government at Harvard University. His new book is called The Future of Power. Join our conversation by calling 1-800-933-5372 or sending email to think@kera.org. That's where we have an email from Michael in Dallas who writes, what we are seeing is an end to the 19th century post-colonial nationalistic power shift where expansionism was tied to growth. We're now seeing a more 20th century post-Cold War devolution of power from governments to international corporations. What do you think about that, Joe?
Well, I think Michael is right. During the 20th century, you had a bipolar world, the United States and the Soviet Union. Governments, particularly the Soviet government, tried to control things. Basically, what's happened to set up this 21st century diffusion of power are two things. One is with the decolonization and the globalization that's led to growth in many countries, you have a lot more countries acting on the world stage. That's sometimes called the rise of the rest. But the other thing that's happened is that technology has made it just very cheap for non-state actors to get involved in the game. And the result is that you have a world in which governments are the main actors on the stage of world politics, but the stage is just a lot more crowded with other countries and with non-governmental actors.
When we approach an objective, you say that it's critical to understand which sort of power is most likely to work to achieve what it is that we want. How do we make that calculus when it comes to an international pressing problem like climate change?
Well, climate change is one where clearly you can't bomb or coerce your way into success. You've got to persuade and attract others toward doing things that they otherwise don't want to do. It's also an interesting example, though, of it's not just power over others. We can't coerce others into doing things on climate change. It's power with others. So, for example, China now produces more CO2 than the United States. This is the one area where they are the superpower, unfortunately. And to persuade China to do better in this area is very important. But it's interesting, as we help empower China to do better on its clean energy, that's good for us as well as good for China. So sometimes power with others, as much as power over others, is important on these new global kinds of challenges.
Do we have a perception problem throughout the rest of the world that we continue to be profligate spenders of particularly fossil fuel resources and are asking the developing world to make changes that we haven't been willing to make ourselves?
Absolutely. And that limits our ability to persuade others when we don't discipline ourselves. I mean, if you look at our dependence on imported oil, if you look at the profligacy with which we use energy, it makes us less persuasive.
We also, you say, need to look at the objectively at the probability of success. And I'm wondering how you might have gone back and looked more carefully at our invasions of Iraq and Afghanistan and whether or not we would have the kind of success we imagined.
Well, I think if one looks at the invasion of Iraq, it was a huge strategic error. It led to an enormous decline in the attractiveness of the United States, as measured by opinion polls in much of the world, about 30 points per country in Europe, even worse in much of the Muslim world. Take Indonesia, for example, where in the year 2000, three-quarters of Indonesia, which incidentally is the largest Muslim country in the world, were pro-American. After the invasion of Iraq, that dropped down to about 15%. So this was very expensive. In that case, the way we used hard power, where it was seen as not legitimate by others, cost us enormously in our soft power.
Do you think there will be a cost to the fact, or was it a misstep by the Obama administration? Initially, in the earlier days of the situation in Egypt, the Obama administration was saying, we expect the Mubarak administration to step down immediately, and now they've sort of backed off that, and he's saying, well, I'll finish out this term, but I won't run again. Is that sort of switch in positions going to be a problem for us in terms of credibility in the long run?
Well, it is, and it's a very difficult tightrope that the administration is trying to walk. It has to deal with governments. I mean, they're the ones who affect policy, like peace in the Middle East or balancing Iran or whatever. And so you can't not deal with the Egyptian government. On the other hand, you have to address Egyptian society at the same time. And it's a society which is now much more empowered by information. So you have to send two messages or deal with two things at the same time, government and society of a foreign country. I think what the administration has been trying to do is to walk that tightrope of being able to work with the Egyptian government, but also to send a message to Egyptian society of our desire for change in the future. And this has come out, as Hillary Clinton said, as indicating that we want to see an orderly transition to democracy. But there are many people who protesters in Tahrir Square who want to see it faster than that. And obviously there are many people in the existing Egyptian government who want to see it slower than that. So it's a tough act.
Is it in East Asia that we have the most to gain by providing military support, East Asia outside of China, to the other states there that don't have militaries as strong as ours?
Yes. In fact, the American military role in East Asia is extremely important. If you look at Japan, India, Vietnam. These are all countries that are very concerned, South Korea, about the rise of Chinese power. And they want more America, not less America. Indeed, it's interesting that in Japan, where we have 50,000 troops based, many people say, why are they there? Well, one reason is because they keep stability in the area, and what's more, the Japanese pay for them. It's cheaper to have them there than back home, and at the same time, they provide us with an enormous amount of influence in the region.
And on the other hand, I would guess that when you have this growing intra-Asian trade market, there is less potential for conflict, is there not, but among the states of Asia with China, because China has a vested interest in buying and selling to these other countries?
Well, that's the good news part, which is we want to see prosperity. We want to see trade among Asian countries. Economic relations are not a zero-sum game where one side loses when the other side wins. They can be win-win situations. So, and we want to participate in that. We want to be among the winners from participating in that economic growth in Asia. But it's also true that any market depends upon a political framework or a sense of security. You're not going to invest in something if you think it's going to collapse. And that's where the American military role comes in. We provide the structure, the framework within which these Asian markets work.
The last thing I want to ask you about is the diffusion of power in how it relates to Latin America and what's taking place there.
Well, I think we're seeing the same type of flow of information to larger parts of populations in Latin America. I think in large part this has often been good. Take Brazil, which has been increasingly effective as a democracy, and is beginning to see a serious positive sense of economic growth. This is all to the good. In the long run, I think that the flows of free flows of information are good for America. But it's also true, as I mentioned, that you can have some places where it creates problems. If you think of the narco-terrorists and the drug dealers in Mexico, it's creating tremendous problems.
Joseph S. Nye, Jr. is University Distinguished Service Professor and former Dean of the Kennedy School of Government at Harvard. His new book is called The Future of Power. Joe, it's been a fascinating hour. Thank you so much for giving it to us.
Well, it's fun to talk to you, Chris.
My name is Chris Boyd. We appreciate all of you who have been listening this hour. It's always wonderful to have you along for our discussions. It's also wonderful to have you on the team of people who support public radio with their dollars simply because you believe it's important to have it here. You can go online to kera.org to make a contribution, or you can call 1-888-694-6931. We are at $132,200 left to raise. Maybe you want to be one-tenth of 1% and give $132.20.
You could do it.
That'd
call
be great.
Call us 888-694-6931 or contribute online at kera.org, whatever level is right for you. She's Chris Boyd. I'm Jeff Whittington. Things I've learned on this show this week. Number one, if you're going to Bhutan, take long gold toe socks.
And they like the gold toe brand. That's
right.
Very important.
I like that brand. Something I learned yesterday or preparing for yesterday's show. The brain is the consistency of room temperature butter.
In a spiky shell. It's not comforting at all.
No,
my
it's
brain
not.
Is maybe melted butter depending on the day of the week.
Well, if you think about room temperature, and room temperature is like, what, 72 degrees?
It's really very
it's
soft.
It's kind of soft and really fragile. That freaked me out a little bit. But the stuff that you learn listening to this show, I can't remember who the guests were the day before yesterday because that's just how my room temperature brain works. But I can remember that the phone number to call to contribute to the station is 888-694-6931. And I can remember that we have a safe and secure place for you to contribute online at kera.org.
I can remember with prompting that we definitely need to say thanks to Philip Smerick and Les Rodriguez in Fort Worth and Mr. and Mrs. Yan Tian Chan in Carrollton. Thank you very much for your contributions.
And I can remember that your contributions make up almost 60% of the revenue needed to run this station. And I said in the last break, and I want to kind of develop this pitch a little bit more, this is sort of the original microfinance system in reverse.
You've thought about this off in the other room, haven't
you? Yeah, we're not, you know, microfinance has gotten to be a pretty big deal. Muhammad Yunus won a Nobel Prize, and there's been a lot of actually, it's really kind of going crazy, even in developing countries of Latin America now. The world is changing for people because people like you and I, Chris, and other people here in America are giving $50 at a time to these organizations, and you know what? That's a great cause. It really is. It's a fantastic cause, and but here. The original public radio model that's, what, 40 years old now, we'll put this high-quality conversation and reporting and news and information out on the radio for free, and then we'll ask you to send some money in. Our basic membership level here at KERA is still $35 for a year. I am likening it to microfinance because really that's what we're asking you to do is to make a small, affordable investment in this radio station. And what we guarantee to return to you is a year of programming that you would miss if it was gone, that you already listened to and that you're helping to pay for. And you know what? You'll enjoy more because you know that you're doing your part. You have made good on helping your public radio station remain healthy. You can do it by contributing at KERA.org. You can do it by calling 888-694-6931.
We have to thank Melissa and Greg Sola in Garland, who write that they let us know that they listen morning, noon, and night and are amazed that our campaigns last more than one day. Thank you. We've come to expect it, but we're amazed, too. If you're going to make a contribution, make one now. Thank you so much, Melissa and Greg. Really appreciate it. Thank you also to Terry Davis in Fort Worth. Your contribution will get us to the end of this membership drive. Believe it or not, we are just as eager as you to see the end of this because we love to provide you full time with this programming that you value, but we can't. It would be irresponsible of us to quit before we had enough money because then we would have to start cutting into programming that we know you count on. That's one thing we refuse to do.
And it would also make the next goal just that much larger. You know, I mean, we actually have to raise the money to run the station. And if we didn't make the goals and we didn't go as long as was necessary to raise the necessary funds to run the station, then before too long, you wouldn't have a station. And, you know, you may have noticed the goals have gotten a little bigger the last couple of years because it's sort of a balance. And always, listeners have contributed over half of the revenue. You have sort of the majority shareholder stake in this radio station, editorially as well as financially. But because things change and, you know, the world of finance and the economy has changed, we're relying on you a little bit more. And you know, with the political climate the way it is, funding for public broadcasting is one of those favorite things for some people in the political world to put on the chopping block, or at least put on the theoretical chopping block. So we never quite know from year to year what that's going to be like. And we do get about 8 to 10% of our operating budget from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. But 58 to 60% comes directly from you, $35, $50, $365 or $1,500 at a time.
1-888-694-6931 is the telephone number. You can also go to kera.org. Maybe you're at that place in your life, and I was there, oh, now it's been a decade or so, maybe more, but where you've never really made a contribution to a not-for-profit organization before. That was something your parents did or your teachers did or people, your boss did. And maybe now you're suddenly realizing that, yes, this is something that you value. You're a member of the community. You really care about information. And if you think about it, you actually do have a little bit of money that you can spare to make this station work. Maybe you just haven't thought of yourself. You haven't made that mental switch yet into the place where you think, okay, it's time for me to start making contributions to things that I value. If that's you, we'd love to hear from you right now at 1-888-694-6931. This does not turn you into your parents, although they're probably lovely people. It just means that you are taking a greater share in standing up for what you believe in.
Well, think about when you got to a certain age and you started, instead of having the party at your friend's house that, you know, started at 10 and went till 4 in the morning, you started having the dinner party at your friend's house, or you started hosting a dinner party. And when someone invites you to a dinner party, or to a get-together, you automatically say, well, what can I bring to the party?
As opposed to, what are you serving?
Exactly. Yeah. You say, what can I bring to contribute? And sometimes your host says, well, I'll just bring something you want to drink, or bring a bottle of wine, or bring a side dish.
But you never show up empty-handed.
Exactly. You would never show up at a potluck or at a dinner party or a thing like that where everyone's sort of bringing something and pitching in. You'd never show up completely empty-handed. But when you tune in to KERA and public radio and you listen without contributing, in a sense, that's kind of what you're doing.
1-888-694-6931 is the telephone number. You can also make your contribution at kera.org. At or above the $120 level today, you can choose to receive a copy of either The Future of Power by Joseph S. Nye Jr. or Radio Shangri-La from the First Hour by Lisa Napoli. We appreciate your contribution now at 1-888-694-6931 or kera.org.
The Think production team includes associate producer Betsy Lewis and engineer Nilofer Arsala. Our senior producer is Jeff Whittington. Learn more about today's show, find out about upcoming programs, and download our free daily podcasts at kera.org/think. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@kera.org.